Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I know those guys. I'm Mike Lupica of the New York Daily News and MLB.com. I know I've seen them both and heard them both before. Oh, I know.
On a TV show, right?
It was a TV show, and now it's been a podcast for over, 200 episodes. So we're still here. And it's the Monday morning edition of our new podcast. We do it twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays after doing it on Sundays. We're eventually going to stake our claim in every single day of the week. guys, there's a lot to talk about in football. Some of it not too serious. But, you know, if you guys remember from last year, I was always seriously in love with Kyler Murray. And I didn't care how big he was. I know he's not as big as Mahomes, but that's the same skill set. And Mitch and Bob, and he looks like he's going to make the Cardinals look smart for taking him. So I want to start here with Kyler Murray. Here's when I knew I thought this kid had greatness in him. He got behind 28-0 to Alabama in a playoff game and actually made us keep watching because of two things: the force of his talent, and the force of his athletic character. I want this. I'll call him this. I'm putting brackets around this. I want the little guy to be big for a long time in the NFL.
Well, he played big in the, you know, again, I'm the last person to think that a preseason game means anything.
Right.
I've railed
right
about it on this program. But I did want to see how he performed. And for the one series that he played, he gets the ball at the 2-yard line
right
after there's
right
a strip. And I have to say, I'm going against a career's worth of who gives a crap about preseason.
Yeah.
I saw in his approach, in his accuracy, in his reading of the defense, in his not so much elusiveness. You know, the one thing you notice is he's not that much faster than everybody else like he was in college. But the accuracy to throws to the sideline, you know, they didn't set up an offense for him to just dump it over the middle and say, hey, look, he completed a pass for 5 yards and the guy ran for another 10. He was throwing left and right. He was analyzing his receivers. I really liked the comfort that he played with. But having said that, it says something that on his one drive, it ended with a holding penalty and then a sack. Because no matter how good Kyler Murray is, he's on a crappy team. And it's going to take a good set of eyes to see his potential this year, I predict. Because while he's going to have flashes, this is not going to be Baker Mayfield. He's not going to turn them around. They're not a good team, and he's going to have to overcome a lot of other parts.
One thing I always come back to with him with regard to any of the intangibles that might be discussed during the course of his progression is that just remember this is a wonderful athlete who was a number 9 draft pick in another sport, number yeah 9 in the first round. And was valued
by Billy Beane, by the way, a guy who doesn't screw around.
Right, and was valued very definitely by that team. $1 million is a good chunk of first round change for a baseball player. And so I'm just throwing this out there because I unlike you guys did not get to see this performance. So but
you weren't
I'm
sitting
certainly
in front of your television set watching preseason football.
I was occupied with other things. But the fact is that I'm very curious about how he's going to do, and I will be monitoring it better as the season goes. But I just always come back to that with him. This is one of those elite athletes. I don't think there's any question about
hey,
that.
Hey, Mitch, you know, and you touched on it. We're going to be obsessed about his size always. We're going to talk about his ability to move in the pocket and to move the pocket. We're going to talk about this his whole career. But his arm is strong. You hear him say this, the ball comes out of his hand
right
hot. He's
right
got one of those arms. And, you know, and people make fun of Ryan and I because, you know, I'm still stuck on the fact that I never thought anybody looked at what Doug Flutie could do on a football field as opposed to what he couldn't do, which was be 5'9". Okay. But the one thing that always shocked people was how far Flutie could throw the ball. And it was, Mitch, it was almost like they thought somebody else threw that ball against Miami that time. I used to say to people, look at the size of his hand and look at the strength of his arm. If you don't know how good Doug Flutie's arm is, then you don't know anything about him. But at his time in pro football, nobody could look past that until the Chargers and the Bills finally gave him a chance. And I just think, Mitch, again, I'm not going off of one preseason game. I'm going off of what I believe that he can do off of what I saw in college. And I think this kid, he might completely change the way they look at small quarterbacks. By the way the other guy you referenced did, which is Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, well, Baker Mayfield, though, has this advantage of being on a team that's been bad for so long. They've accumulated an amazing amount of first-round draft picks who are coming into their own. And so he was able to lift them to a point, remember last season, where we actually thought they might make the playoffs. I mean, this is the Cleveland Browns.
Now they're talking about him as a Super Bowl contender, Mitch.
And listen, if you put Kyler Murray on that team with those targets now, I'd say the same thing. He is not, though, and this is the thing we have to recognize about football. You know, this is the Archie Manning syndrome. And, you know, you can be great, but if the team around you is lousy, it's not just that, well, okay, but you're the quarterback, make the plays. Because what happens is you fall behind because your defense gives up umpteen points. You fall behind 14-0 in first quarters, and suddenly your offensive game plan is thrown out, and you have to try to pass your way back in, and they're laying for it, and the defensive backs are waiting for it, and you end up throwing a bunch of interceptions. And then people say, oh, well, look at him, he's throwing a bunch of interceptions, and it's really not the quarterback's fault as much as, you know, he's trying to thread things through defenses that are already geared towards protecting a lead as opposed to defending against what you can do. So the team you're on in football really does affect your performance, particularly as a quarterback, because it takes away a lot of your game plan. And you could see that they're just not a good team. Arizona is not a good team, and they don't have the years of build-up of draft picks, that all this young talent joining him. So I just hope that if he has games where he throws three interceptions in a game, that it doesn't become one of those things that kind of ruins young quarterbacks because they play on bad teams. He's going to have to muddle through a few years.
Mitch, what you said is all accurate, no question. And Mike, just what occurs, you know, what I think about here is that, okay, it's one thing. The professional should be able to assess everything you said. A true professional and evaluator of a general manager, a coach, a talent evaluator, you know, should be able to factor in all this stuff when evaluating the real worth of somebody as time goes on. The fans, you know, and maybe even the media, you know, although most of us are truly brilliant people, but a few guys aren't, you know, are not as capable of making that distinction. But no, you're absolutely right. I mean, football is so contextual. Oh my, well, all sports are contextual, naturally. But my God, because there's two units, there's three actually with the special teams, and you know, you're one on every given Sunday, you're 1/46th of a hole, right. And so yeah, absolutely.
Hey, meanwhile, there were a couple other guys, I want to ask you guys about Mike in your backyard.
Wait. Let's not leave Kyler Murray just yet, okay? Because he's going to be such a headliner, good or bad, in the season. Mitch, I'm not saying that the Cardinals are going to go 7-8-1 this year the way the Browns did last year. Obviously, the Browns have been stockpiling talent, but the Browns have shown us how quickly things can change. Because guess what, Mitch? They were stockpiling talent when they were coming off at, wait for it, 0-16 year, okay? 1 year ago. 1 year ago. And a year later, Mike Greenberg was talking about this, and I've been thinking about this for a while. A year later, we are talking about them as a Super Bowl contender. Do the Cardinals have that kind of talent? No. Do they have a Myles Garrett? No. Do they have an Odell Beckham Jr.? They have an old Odell Beckham Jr., okay? But I think this kid has a chance to be a transformative player. And no, do I think it's going to happen this year? I don't. But could we be having a vastly different conversation in a year? I actually believe we might.
Well, the thing about the way Cleveland built, though, is they kind of built up their positions except for quarterback. So when they finally got that quarterback, they had people at other positions and then added the same year that he was in, and then now have added some more. Arizona was dead last dead last in total yards last year in the NFL, and not by a little. But they rank 32nd with 240 total yards a game. Mm. I mean, 240 total yards a game. A lot of quarterbacks get that in passing in the first half. The next lowest team, Miami, had 290. So they were 50 yards worse than the worst, second worst team in football. So they got a lot of work to do. And I'm just saying, I can see a year where they go 4-12 and people, as you just pointed out, Bob, fans, media, they have a hard time celebrating quarterbacks on 4-12 teams. Scouts do. Scouts say, yeah, they got all the raw stuff. But, you know, coaches are paid to win. And
Peyton Manning was 3-13 his rookie year.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to go back in time and see if people thought that year what they ultimately ended up thinking about him, or did they think, well, maybe the Colts made a mistake by drafting him? So I don't know. I'm just saying, be patient. But remember where I began. I saw something in him that really impressed me for the first time he's on an NFL field, and I hope we get more chances to see it. That's all I'm saying. And now can we talk about a couple other quarterbacks?
Sure.
All right. So I thought it was very interesting. East Coast, a couple of new quarterbacks. Jones with New York, I thought was impressive. I watched it. You know, the nice part about this is you only have to watch like a series. You don't have to watch the whole game because they take the guys out. Jones looked quite good. Dwayne Haskins did not. And, you know, everyone in Washington, the word out of there is saying, you know, he's got a long way to go before he's an NFL quarterback. He's still got a lot of stuff to learn. We'll see how that plays in Washington. But you saw the New York. I mean, I'm sure that they were canonizing him already and telling Eli to move over.
Mitch, you said he played good. No. Mitch, he's on his way to Canton. Mm. Okay. Bob, do you think like a 46?
Who's going to stand
46,
up for him?
Yeah. Who's going to be his
measuring his jacket.
Mitch, Bob, you think it's a 46 show? I'm not good with.
He's a talk. Yeah,
Taylor Lupica is better. She'll say, okay. But I think.
Nobody looks good in a jacket, no matter who the.
But Bob and Mitch, I don't think it takes much more than 5 for 5 in a preseason game to get you, as Parcells used to say. I know, listen, he looked fine. There's been so much speculation. He was an extremely controversial pick. Oh, my God. And, guys, this is slightly off point, but not quite off point. Did either one of you read the SI.com interview with the Giants general manager who drafted Daniel Jones, number 6, Dave Gettleman?
No.
Okay. I urge you to read it because that's another thing. If not only is Jones on his way to the Hall of Fame, but Gettleman apparently invented pro football. He invented pro football. And so this past week has been hilarious because remember the groans when they took him 6 and why they didn't wait until 17. Did the kid look poised? He did. Did he look like he can see the field and understand? He's a Duke guy. He ought to understand that. But there's one big concern, and it goes back to what we were just, Mitch, it goes back to what we were just talking about with Kyler Murray. He doesn't have that kind of arm. And it will be interesting to see if going forward, if the fact that he doesn't have a cannon back there is going to hold him back.
I'm actually looking at a piece from Forbes, and this may point out why Forbes is better when it comes to business stuff than necessarily sports, where they are actually in the second paragraph, they're saying Daniel Jones's performance, which earned Jones a 158.3 passer rating.
Can
we please agree that if you're only in for one drive, you cannot use the passer rating number? It's okay. You want to use 5 for 5, 67 yards, one touchdown. Okay. That's all undeniable stuff. That goes in the record books. But your passer rating, that's as bad as when the cop gets you right as you're coming out of the curve at your maximum speed and then accuses you of, you know, you were going 57 in the 35-mile zone, you know. And why did you clock me right at that moment if you got me 2 minutes before or a second later? This is the same thing. You cannot give a passer rating for one drop.
Did they get his exit velocity and launch angle?
Oh, wait, was it 158 and change? Or was it
158.3?
Oh, 0.3. Oh, okay.
0.3.
Okay.
Yeah. So we see where we're going.
No, he looked swell. You know, swell, if you're a Jets fan, you're much more excited about your second year quarterback, because I think Sam Darnold, Mitch and Bob, I think he's the goods. And I think that you might see the Jets get dramatically better. And I'm not saying they're going to challenge Bobby's team in the AFC East, because nobody ever challenges Bobby's team in the AFC East. But Darnold, arm, poise, presence, a year under his belt, ability to move in the pocket. I believe he will continue to validate the fact that the Jets took him after the Giants did not.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. I think... Yeah, it's pretty universal opinion.
And by the way, I will have a parting shot today, guys, on the kid who's still playing quarterback for the New England Patriots. Because Mitch, you're going to think I'm crazy, because you know I go off my rails sometimes. I don't think Brady is a flash in the pan. I do not. I absolutely do not.
Glad to hear you say that. Meanwhile, let's talk about what has dominated the news in the NFL preseason.
Didn't you just do a parting shot on Antonio Brown?
I did. And here, all this time, I thought it was his feet, and it turns out it's his head, which his head is connected to his feet if you go through the brain part of it. And I think that really all of this is about his attitude, which begins in his head, although the controversy for him is now about his helmet. His helmet. Antonio Brown, now write this down, folks, if you're listening at home. A Schutt Air Advantage, S-C-H-U-T-T. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is going to apparently determine whether Antonio Brown plays football or not. 12-year-old Schutt Air Advantage helmet that is now no longer recognized or allowed by the NFL. Ironically, now here's the status up till this moment. I don't know, while we're talking, he could be issuing some other crazy statement, because he had his hearing on Friday. For those of you not following at home, Antonio Brown has not yet played for the Oakland Raiders, despite what they gave up for him and the big brouhaha about getting him on the team and John Gruden and working together, all the rest of that stuff. First, he had a foot injury, which was murky as to how it came about. And then it turned out, well, actually, the worst part of it was he went into a cryotherapy. Cryogenics is when you freeze yourself for the rest
that
of
was,
your life.
That was Ted Williams. Yeah.
Yeah, that was Ted Williams. And it may end up being Antonio Brown.
Not yet.
He went to a cryotherapy lab in France, didn't wear the proper footwear, and basically frostbit his foot. Now it's all blistering and bleeding because he didn't put on... it seems to me, if you're going to go into something as dangerous as that, freezing cold tank, someone ought to make sure you're wearing your
Mitch,
shoes.
And Mitch, wait. Just let me ask you a question. Were all the good tanks in the United States taken?
Yeah. I mean, that part is just bizarre.
Well, I don't even like to eat out sometimes in foreign countries. So.
Yeah, you got to go to Paris to find a frozen tank. It seems to me there's got to be a place in Wisconsin or at least Canada where you can find a frozen tank.
Or someplace close to his team. I'm really, what am I going to do today? Okay, I want to see the Eiffel Tower and
get my foot frozen off.
Get my foot frozen.
You couldn't be further away from Oakland, California than Paris without having to start your way back on the around the globe. But now, after that debacle, now we find out that he threatened all last week to quit football, absolutely quit football, if he's not allowed to use his old helmet. He's going to quit football. Then he goes in and has a hearing with the NFL, files a grievance against them, had a hearing, and apparently in the hearing, he kind of shifted from threatening to retire to basically threatening the league that if he's forced to wear the new helmets and he gets injured, he's going to hold the NFL responsible. I don't know what that means. I don't know what kind of teeth that has. But, gentlemen, what is the conundrum that is Antonio Brown?
Well, forget the feet thing for a second. Bob, I will put myself – I'll raise a hand and put myself at the front of the class on this, okay? Were you aware that this new helmet thing was a thing? Because I was listening – I was coming back from New York today, and I heard – Tom Brady from his weekly thing on WEEI in Boston, right?
That's correct.
And he was talking about how uncomfortable he is and how the helmet he's giving up is one. He won four Super Bowls. Were you guys even aware that this new helmet thing was in place?
Yes, we were, because of Brady. This has been going on for months. We've heard about this from Brady. And yet, you know, in the end, we know that Tom Brady, as much as he's going to be unhappy, and he's not the only one, I think Rodgers, others are, is going to wear the new helmet, period. And that's it. And they're saying, you know.
Yeah, they're pretty clear on that from the league office.
And this has been, they were given a year's notice. These guys were grandfathered in. He was grandfathered in last year. Antonio Brown was grandfathered in. This thing was supposed to be take place last year. I don't know how the differentiation was, who got to get grandfathered in, but obviously the superstars did. And so Brown knew this, and you know, I'm sure the Raiders never dreamed it would be an issue. I mean, even with a guy like Brown, where anything could be an issue, I'm sure they didn't think that. Yeah, we know about it, Mike, and it's, you know, it's all for, you know, we all know what it's about. It's about safety.
We got to come down on the league side.
Totally, Robert. And the thing is this, though, Brown's claim, his objection is that it impairs his vision. I know that there are other unhappy wide receivers. But I have not specifically heard or read anyone else making that specific claim.
No, it's Brown and Brady. They're the only two players I've heard talking about this.
Brady is talking about comfort, and Brown is talking about vision. And you're right, Bob. If vision was an issue with these helmets, you would be hearing it from every receiver out there.
I don't hear
everybody
it from,
who has to look right. back for the ball. In fact, every running back, everybody who, you know, has got to survey the field to be able to see, and defensive backs as well. So the fact that Antonio Brown is the only person saying this, the fact that he was given a grandfather thing, the fact that he's trying to hang on to a helmet that's 12 years old when there is clearly a rule in effect in the league, and every player knows it, that you can't wear a helmet that's over 10 years old. So he was already in violation of the rules with his old helmet before they ever did this thing. And this is something that, I mean, there ain't many of them, but this is something that the league and the players union actually agree about.
Yes.
They don't even agree that it's Monday, Mitch.
Important point. Yeah, I didn't know that until this morning.
Yes, they agree on this thing. They came to this together. So he's either wearing the new helmet or he's not going to play football. And don't you feel that there is something weird going on with him? I don't know if it's because of the way he left Pittsburgh. I don't know if he doesn't feel like he's confident in how he's going to play in Oakland. Maybe this foot thing is more of a concern. But it sounds like a guy who's not really anxious to get out there on the field.
Well, there's 30 million reasons why he's going to play. And that's that. He's not walking away from $30 million, if he is. I mean, that would be the ultimate Antonio Brown move. If he wants
to,
fine.
Bob.
I say good riddance. Goodbye. You know, you're in the books. Yeah. You know, you had your 600-yard seasons and 100 reception seasons. And, you know,
Mike, what do you think about Gruden's reaction to this?
Well, he's, you know, they're trying to downplay this, okay? And because he wanted this guy. He wanted this guy with the Raiders. So I watched him give some quote that, you know, we're going to try to handle this as well we can. We're trying to look at both sides, blah, 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 okay? I heard Dan Orlovsky talking about this with Greeny today, and he made a good point. And is Antonio Brown, forget about walking away from all the money, Mitch, is he going to walk away from a Hall of Fame career after the way he left Pittsburgh over a freaking helmet? Is that, does anybody actually, or do we think this is going to get worked out the way Michael Thomas got worked out, the way we think Ezekiel Elliott's going to get worked out?
The thing I just said is just, isn't it insurmountable? Isn't it, ultimately, we know he's going to play. Is he really going to quit?
But if you're going to play, Bob, why are you so aggressive with a fight you know you cannot win?
I think we're maybe looking under the wrong rug here.
All right,
I think that Antonio Brown has become addicted to publicity. You know, he was used to all that attention in Pittsburgh. And sometimes, you know, if you start to get negative attention and you realize, hey, there's a lot more attention and negative attention than there is positive attention, you get addicted to it. And he was, you know, all controversial last year. The comments he made about Pittsburgh, about Ben Roethlisberger, about his contract deal, about all the rest of it. And then he comes to, you know, now football's back up and going. And here he is back in the news again. And, you know, I'm not equating him to Dennis Rodman in any way, but that strain of like, hey, whatever I'm doing, look at how many people are talking about me, starts to get into your bloodstream. Because I agree with you, this is moronic. You're not going to not play football on account of your helmet, but you may want to go down swinging on that point and tell everybody, you know, I want to wear my helmet, and if I have to wear this new helmet and something happens to me and blah, 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 blah. What's interesting, and the reason I asked you, Mike, about Gruden's reaction is this. You remember last year, Khalil Mack was giving him a hard time, right? He was mouthing off, and he wasn't particularly happy. And he,
this is a great point.
He sent Khalil Mack to the Bears.
Yep.
Because he didn't want an unhappy guy on his team.
Mitch, it's a great point. He can't do it two times in a row. You know, I mean, Mitch, we talked about, how many times did we talk about this last year? He changed the course of the Bears franchise, by trading them Khalil Mack. And whatever he said and whatever they got back, I don't care what they got back, okay? They're not getting him back. And now he goes, now he brings in, again, a Hall of Fame talent. He might be the best. We could have a conversation about if there's anybody that we think is better than Antonio Brown. Mitch, here's what I think. I think John Gruden needs this like a hole in the head or a helmet, you're being slapped upside the head with a helmet.
Yeah. I think what it goes to show, among other things, is that you cannot always overestimate or underestimate the capacity that some people have, you know, to do things that are incredible or incomprehensible. I'm sure the Raiders are not stupid. They don't know the guy comes with, shall we say, baggage. They know this, but the extent of it still is overwhelming, and they're shocked to find out how incredibly, you know, off the rails he is.
Yeah, well, receivers have that reputation.
Oh, yes.
He has that reputation at the top of that group of receivers. He thinks he's the best in football. He basically made his case for a contract to prove that, and maybe he just feels he's entitled to, you know, anything I say, any sneeze I have, the whole world has to say, God bless you. But he's going to lose this fight. And there's a point at which not playing in the preseason when you're with a new team is going to leave you behind as well. You do have to ultimately catch up. This is not a guy. This, if he was missing training camp with the Steelers, I'd say, Antonio Brown, Steelers training. I'm pretty sure he can get out on the field with Ben Roethlisberger and pretty much figure it out. But he's got to get used to a new quarterback, a new system, a new team, a new coach. You don't do that 1 week before the season starts and expect to come out of the gate as excellent as you expect yourself to be.
But we've seen now you don't to a degree. I mean, obviously for the most part, but we have seen guys amaze us with. Once again, now we got to go back to part A with him. The part A, it starts all with this. He's an extraordinary talent. He is an extraordinary talent. And the other thing that we must introduce into this conversation when we're evaluating what might happen in terms of actual performance this year, whenever it begins, is that. Among the things that people say about him is that he is an incredible hard worker. He is a dedicated craftsman and no one has ever accused him of anything, of being anything less. And so once the bell rings and he does do what he's supposed to do. You just have to put up a lot of nonsense along the way.
First, he's got to get the frostbite off his foot.
Well, I know.
And then he's got to put a helmet on his head, and then he's got to learn the plays. And you know, a running back has that kind of instinctual kind of thing. Certain other positions have instinctual kind of things. But wide receiver, you got to be on the same page as your team. You can have excellent speed and all the rest of it, but if the guy's throwing to you, doesn't know where you're going. It doesn't matter if you beat your man down the field. So there are certain positions that require you working in. You know, you got to get that. We always talk about that chemistry, that unseen thing, you know, between great quarterbacks and their receivers where they just throw the ball and they know where the guy is going to be. And you got to work on that. And he's not working with Tom Brady out there. Okay. Mr. Carr is not Mr. Brady. And so I think they need as much work as they can get.
All right. The Ezekiel Elliott drama continues, by the way, and there's not much to say except, you know, we've all volunteered to go down and get Zeke's side of the story in Cabo. Have we not, Mitch? We've all volunteered. Somebody's got to do it. All right, let's switch to baseball because we have spent an awful lot of this baseball season talking about the Yankees. We talked about the Dodgers. We certainly talked about the Houston Astros, okay? On June 3rd of this year, gentlemen, and all baseball fans, all right, the Cleveland Indians were 11.5 games behind the Minnesota Twins. 11.5 games behind. Since then, they have gone 41-16. At the end of May, the Indians were still a 500 team. And we've talked about how many other teams like the Mets and the Nationals and everybody changed the narrative. Here's what the Indians, who start a series now against Mr. Ryan's Red Sox, have done, okay? And I don't know if you agree with me or not, but they have played themselves into the conversation again where by the time we get to October, if they end up winning the Central, and Mitch, you've been saying for a while that you thought they were going to do that,
yep.
I think that you can put them in the conversation now, Yankees, Astros, Dodgers. And I looked up yesterday, by the way, because we kind of scratched our head when they went for pitching and traded Bauer, okay? Puig is hitting .357. Since he becoming a member of the Cleveland Indians.
Not only that, Mike, OPS 984.
You know, no, he's played his ass
in 11
off,
games.
Yep, he
has definitely delivered the goods for them so far. Once again, you know, you never know. He is the, you know, baseball's reigning ticking time.
And he goes in there with Lindor and Santana. And even though Jose Ramirez is not having a good year, they can hit, and they have, Mitch, they have one of the best managers of recent times in this sport.
We know that. And I think that plays a big part in it, especially coming back the way they had to. You know, you don't do that under a bad manager because a lot of that is about belief in yourself, belief in what kind of team you got. We knew coming in. Let's take this back a little bit. We didn't expect Minnesota to do what they did, and they held on for the first half of the season with some phenomenal offense, and they kind of stole. You know, they kind of stole the spotlight in the Central. I mean, it's not a glamour division to begin with. Everybody's watching the Yankees and the Red Sox anyhow. And then, they're watching Trout with the Angels. And so, the middle of the country kind of gets, and whoever's going to come out of the Central this year. But when we began the Central predictions, we all said Cleveland was going to win. Or at least, most people in the know. Nobody was predicting Minnesota, and God knows nobody was taking Detroit or Chicago. So, Cleveland was supposed to do this, and you gotta salute Francona for keeping that alive and making sure that when they did fall behind by whatever it was, 9-10 games, that he somehow created an atmosphere that said this is a long marathon and we are the better team. They pulled even after this weekend series with Minnesota, which was huge. I think they're now going to go in and if they do unto the Red Sox as they have done unto others, they ought to, win this series too. And I think that helps just catapult them out there. So, but they are kind of doing what we expected them to do in the Central. We don't, this isn't a come from the basement story here. They've been good for a while.
No, I thought the Twins would be a lot better. And I told you
not
guys
this
back,
good, though, right?
No, not this good. I remember telling you guys back in the winter that Buck Showalter was watching the things they were doing, and he said, nobody does those things unless they don't think they're going to be really good this year. And they have been really good. And by the way, I'm not writing them off, okay? They've got some team that can hit the crap out of the ball. They can hit home runs, all that stuff. But the Indians are a fascinating story to me. Do you know where they are in Major League Baseball payrolls for this year? Huh. 19th. They're not a small market, meaning the city of Cleveland, but they operate that way. They don't throw money around. They can't throw money around. They have the 19th biggest payroll in baseball this year, and here they are again. And trying to end, it's certainly not a Cubs-like drought for the World Series, but they last won a World Series in 1948. They came within a whisker of doing it 3 years ago. Guys, don't you just think it's fun to have them back in the conversation like this?
Well, I do, and I think it's interesting, though, that the town is not reacting the way, they –
that well to it, though, yet. Maybe the rest of the season they will, but the attendance is shockingly low compared to what it was when they were the team that should have done better, of course, as we know, in the 90s. But
and Bob, by the way, the team they're playing, tonight, the defending champions of the world,
yeah,
that team spends $100,000. I mean, wait a minute. The payroll for them, $100 million. Excuse me.
$100,000. I was going to say that's the Bat Boy.
No, it sounded like Austin Power, yeah. Dr. Evil. $1 million. Okay. The Red Sox are $227. Okay, million. The mm-hmm. Cleveland Indians are $121 million this mm-hmm. year. Think about that, and think about the seasons the two of them are having.
Well, they're who the Tigers want to be. You know, they want to have that
that
kind
mid-market,
of
yeah, like a college basketball, like a mid-major. You know, going right. for the title.
But who
Mitch.
gets to go to the Final Four? By the way, here's what Boston is facing here. I can't recall the last time I've read this. Okay, Monday's pitcher, Zach Plesac. Is the Indians are 6-0 in his last six starts.
Yes.
Tuesday's pitcher, Mike yeah. Clevinger, yeah. they are 6-0 in his last seven
yeah.
starts.
Yeah.
And Wednesday's pitcher, Shane Bieber, they are also 6-1 in his last eight starts. I mean, you know, that's the role that they're on here right now with their starting pitching.
Hey, Mitch, by the way, if the Red Sox win one of those games, it will not be the kind of upset that the Orioles beating Verlander in the Asteroids yeah. was yesterday. I saw that story today and I said, this can't possibly be that the Astros were the biggest favorite in the history of the... Basically, yeah.
I was stunned by that story because I never follow odds
in baseball games. Me neither.
I mean, you know, who would bet a baseball game? But apparently, the people who keep track of this kind of thing, yes, that was the greatest upset in baseball history or in this.
It was like the Miracle on Ice beating the Soviets in Lake Placid. Yeah.
Can I point out that Justin Verlander wasn't in the game when they scored the runs in the ninth inning, right?
By the way, the Astros had beaten them. To speak to it, Bob, what was the score of Saturday's game?
23-2.
23-2.
They used up all their offense.
With 25 hits. Yeah.
It's like my father always says, they should save some of those runs for tomorrow.
I just want to amplify, you know, the Indians, they're doing this. And their audience is not responding. They're averaging. They're number 23 in attendance out of 30.
Do you think they're waiting back, Bob, or you know, because you remember they had the big winning streak and then they didn't win. Okay, do you think that factors into this at all?
There's I don't know. There's some larger economic forces and
is it Brown's fever gripping Cleveland? And nobody wants to talk about the Indians.
But just let the history show that this is the first team that ever sold out a ballpark in advance in the first season and back in the 90s. They were the first ones. The Giants then. did it. The Red Sox did it, but the Indians did it first. I mean, they were all the rage in the 90s in that ballpark, and it's all just totally disappeared. And
well, you know, I mean, they do go to the well a lot and don't come back with the big bucket, and that may be it. Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. You got extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to-do that you do today.
All right, let me ask you guys one. They're going to announce the NBA schedule today. It doesn't exactly get me excited like finding out who's going to play who when in the NFL. But...
Can I make a prediction about that schedule?
Yes, sir.
Christmas Day, Lakers against somebody.
That's a good call. By the way, were you surprised to see Vegas making the Lakers the favorite to win the championship?
Of course I am. And remember.
All right, this is what I want to ask you guys.
Odds are. Right.
Do either of you, and I think I know the answer to this with Ryan, but I'm going to ask Mitch first. Do either of you have any sympathy for Carmelo Anthony's current circumstances, where he even offered himself at the age of 35 to Team USA, and they said, no, thank you. And cannot get a job. And by the way, who he has been, as Bob knows, Bob has seen some of the games. He has been an honored Olympian because they put him in a perfect role. Come off the bench, make 4-3, sit down. Okay.
If it is true that he is willing now, finally, to accept mortality and come off the bench happily and do what he did in those Olympics, and fine. if that's true, he says that's true, then I would say yes, that that there ought to be a roster spot in the league somewhere for Carmelo Anthony.
How can Mitch? How can the Lakers? There's no place on him if they can work out the financials for him to do the what I just described was his Olympic rule for the Los Angeles. It's astonishing that he can't get a job.
Well, okay, he can't get a job because of what Bob said. Everybody in the league who's in the know knows his mentality and knows when you put him on a team, he's not going to just go accept that spot role. I think the only reason he wants to volunteer for the USA team is because he wants to use it as a trial to try to show people he can still play so he can get a job. But Vince Carter is still in the league and he's 42. It's not the age. It's what role are you willing to play? Absolutely, right. Mike. Carmelo Anthony can still play basketball for any team if he's willing to say, I will do this limited thing and that's it. But you know what happens? The minute he gets in there, everybody starts talking to him and everybody, you know, why aren't you playing more? And when I'm depressed, I'm not really getting what I want. Well, maybe I'm unhappy here, but there's a reason he's bounced around so many teams, given the fact that he had such raw offensive talent when he was younger. So I don't think it's age. I think it's acceptance of role. Nobody's going to say that out loud, but I think that's what the GMs are saying to each other.
Mitch and Bob, do you think he's a cautionary tale for guys say, you know what, if you're 30 now, okay, or you're 31, start thinking about how long you want to do this and how you want to interact with management and how you want to interact with your teammates after you've made more money than you could ever possibly imagine or spend. Is he a cautionary tale like that?
Yeah. Well, I guess you could say that. I mean, he's, you know, he views himself on the same level, right, as a LeBron and historically.
Oh, I don't think he does anymore, Bob. But,
well, he did at one.
He did.
You mentioned Vince Carter. There's another guy in this league who's recognized long ago how he could make himself viable and stick around and have a career. Udonis Haslem has re-upped with the Miami Heat. For like an 18th year or whatever it is.
And listen, there's a lot of players who are older than him.
He was never a superstar. I don't even know if he ever played in an all-star game, but he was a quality player. And then he recognized how to be useful to an organization.
Amari Stoudemire was looking for tryouts.
What about Jamal Israel. Crawford, Paul Gasol, Kyle Korver, Zach
jobs.
Randolph, Ty Chandler. They're all older than Carmelo Anthony, and they're still in there, but they're not doing what their NBA draft preview said that they were going to do. They've recognized they've become role players, and if he's willing to become a role player and take role player money, but Mike, the cautionary tale part, this is interesting, because Carmelo's only 35.
Yeah.
But what's going to happen, I think, in the future is so many players now, star players, are starting their career at 19 or 20 at the oldest, that I don't, by the time you get to 35, I don't think they're going to be playing. Yeah. I think it's going to move up, you know, and I think teams are going to start, as we see in other sports, teams are going to start bailing out on guys when they hit their 30th birthday because they can replace them with a 19-year-old, you know, and if they start taking them straight out of high school, which is in the works, then it's going to move even lower in the NBA.
Well, it's boy, I'll tell you what, these guys think they're going to be in the headlines forever. They just don't want to be in the kind of headlines that Carmelo is making right now. It is time for our parting shot.
Now, parting shot.
Now, you don't have to like the New England Patriots. Most football fans outside of a 6-state region do not. Many of them hate the Patriots the way other baseball fans once hated the New York Yankees. You can cite Spygate and Deflategate and who knows, maybe even Massage Parlorgate if you want to. All that. But it's impossible not to continue to marvel at the talent and staying power of Tom Brady. He's not 35. He's 42 years old. He's still talking about playing until he's 45. He can still make news talking about a helmet and or putting his house in Brookline, Mass up for sale. But he has played the most important position in sports for an incredibly high level for 2 decades now, won 6 Super Bowls, and when it was his team against the kid Patrick Mahomes' team last year in the AFC Championship game, you know how that came out. And when he was up against another young gun in the Super Bowl, Jared Goff, you know how that came out.
Kareem played past his 40th birthday. Jack Nicklaus won his last major at the age of 46, an enduring American sports moment even now. But that was in golf. This is pro football. You know who the enduring moment in that sport is? Number 12 of the Patriots, trying to make it to his 10th Super Bowl this year. You know what he is to the rest of the sport? Bradygate.
You know, there is often a supposition in the world that sports is just quote-unquote entertainment. I railed against this for literally decades. And I just want to try to give some kind of clarity to this. The difference between entertainment, which was by and large scripted, and the difference between being interested in sport as opposed to such other things as going to the movies, going to the theater, reading, etc. Okay, it is the uncertainty. It is the you never know aspect of sport that separates it from all these other things. And I shall give you Exhibit A. We have already partially alluded to Exhibit A. On Saturday evening, or after whenever, a late afternoon evening, the Houston Astros demolished the Baltimore Orioles 23-2. They had 25 hits, 6 home runs. 6 different guys had 3 hits or more. There was fallout. There were bombs, home run. A rookie hit 3 home runs, Alvarez. On and on and on. It was an humiliation for a team that's been humiliated, but they thought more than they could possibly be all year previously. This was the ultimate humiliation. That was on Saturday. On Sunday, facing what may be the best pitcher in baseball, a Hall of Famer, that team emerged victorious. The Baltimore Orioles slept on it, came back, and after giving up 3 runs in the top of the ninth to fall behind, got 3 in the bottom of the ninth to beat the same team that beat them the night before 23-2. They beat them 8-7. Moral of this story, you can take all your plays, all your movies, all your art museums, all your books, all your other entertainment things and stuff them when it comes to matching the uncertain wonder of sport. Thank you very much.
It was 25 years ago today that baseball went on strike, 1994. It was hoped that it would take days, then weeks, but it took months, and the unthinkable took place. The World Series was not played for the first time in 90 years. If you're old enough to remember the name Donald Fear, then you likely remember this sad chapter in baseball. It revolved around a salary cap, which the owners saw as a necessary way to control costs, and the players saw as an artificial way to keep their salaries down, and the fans saw as a stupid antidote to the inability of owners to control themselves when it came to free agents. A game of chicken elevated to the ultimate decision by Fear to call for a strike. People forget that at the time, the Montreal Expos were 74-40, their best season in history. Ironically, those Expos had the second lowest payroll in baseball. 25 years later, we're still witnessing similar issues. Teams spend but don't win. Teams don't spend and do win. Witness Boston and Cleveland that we just spoke about. We sort of have a salary cap with a luxury tax, but not really. And both sides still complain whenever labor issues come up. But the good news is that it's been 25 years and no strike. In fact, there have been no labor stoppages since 2011 in all 4 major sports. Back then, the NBA lost a chunk of its season and the NFL lost a chunk of its summer. Nobody likes strikes, not in any profession. But when you look at the history of baseball and you see 1994 with an asterisk indicating there was no World Series and therefore no champion, you realize sports are different. If they don't culminate in one winner, what's the point? I bet a lot of former Montreal Expos fans have been saying that for years. That's going to wrap it up for today's program. We do this every Monday and Thursday, the Sports Reporters Podcast, which you can get on all the popular podcast platforms, including Spotify and Stitcher and Apple and all the rest. So if you like what you heard, please leave us a comment. If you didn't like what you heard, please leave us a comment. And make an appointment to join us again on Thursday when we do this all over. Until then, with Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.